Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show. This is your morning show host, Julie Calamine, and I'm joined by my co-host, Phil Huff. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Julie. How are you?
Fine, although it sounds like my mouth is having trouble talking. Too many weeks off, I guess.
I guess so. How was the fishing?
It was excellent. We had a wonderful time, although very happy to be back in Sandpoint. Love Sandpoint.
Yeah, welcome back to early spring, late winter.
Yeah, something like that.
It was snowing up the mountains yesterday, I understand.
Snowed on my hubby yesterday when he was with the Monday hikers, so that was kind of exciting in July, anyway.
Fire in the fireplaces on July 2nd and
there
3rd.
There you go. It was like 45 this morning. Yeah. Well, I'm going to do a quick weather report. It looks like weather's going to be improving for the 4th and the week after, and then we'll be on to our morning show guest, Mark Sauter from the fire department. However, today we're not going to be looking for anything too exceptionally wonderful. It looks like a high of 62 with some showers possible. Tonight, cold again with a low of 45, and then oh, wait a minute. That was Monday. This is Tuesday. Hang on. This is Julie back from vacation.
It should be getting better than that.
That's right. No, today is much better than that. Yeah. It's today a high of 64 with a chance of thunderstorms, a low tonight of 46. Tomorrow, the 4th, is going to have a high.
Yeah, what's the parade weather?
Parade weather is 76 with mostly sunny. Could it be any nicer? Perfect.
Yeah.
And then Wednesday night, partly cloudy, a little warmer at night, 52, and then it's just getting warmer and warmer, highs in the 80s and sunny for the rest of the week. So very good. Well, Phil, we are joined with a very timely guest this morning, and it's Mark Sauter from the fire department. Good morning, Mark. You're fire marshal.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here again. We've talked with you in the past, last year.
It's always great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's great to see you.
Mark's always filled with great reminders, great information, and a very timely topic for the coming up on the 4th tomorrow.
That's right, because we have fire safety, and then we have 4th of July fire safety, and that's very important. Mark, tell us, for those who didn't hear you last year, tell us a bit about your job, what your duties are.
Mostly, I do residential fire prevention work out in Sagal. I go out and visit properties. We try and do public education for homeowners out there. We go to the fairgrounds and we go to different public events and try and educate all of our residents and property owners on how they can try and prevent the spread of wildland fires and how they and then ultimately prevent having a fire at home. Talked about defensible space and property identification, property access. You know, what they can do individually to help us on a response, to keep themselves a little more safe.
That's a big job. That's a lot of areas to cover.
Yeah. Hopefully things they can do to prevent having the fire marshal coming out.
Sure.
Not that everyone doesn't love to see you.
Well, actually we make house calls. We're happy to, I go out and do fire prevention work with, homeowners all the time. They can call our office, and we're happy to go out and visit with them and give them some insight as to what they can, the steps they can do, and help them prioritize these things. So, sometimes a visit by the fire marshal is not a bad thing.
It's only when it's with the big red truck and the lights flashing and horn blaring.
That's right.
Right. And I kid with them a little bit and say, you know, it's usually when you call 911, you really want that fire engine to be there right away. You don't want to have them sitting out in the street or you see them in a distance confused. So I always say, you know, little things like the road signs and the address signs at the base of the driveway and having a nice road up to your house and clear of, you know, width and height. All those things make a difference because when you call 911, most everybody wants those emergency services right away. So there are steps that we can do to make that go faster.
That's true. I've been a recipient of the former visit, the one without the lights and the sirens going, and it was very helpful. And I will say I've done most of the things you've asked me to do. But Mark, you have experience, and you're out talking with people now, but that wasn't the first thing you do. You've got a background in fire safety, yes?
Yes. I worked in the fire service for 30 years in Southern California. And I bought property back here, up here in the early 90s, and always wanted to come up here and retire up here. And when I came up here in 2012, and I did a little volunteering with the fire department, and after being here for a little while, it just appeared that we could do some fire prevention work with residents, and that would be a productive thing to do. So I presented it and we talked to the fire chief about it. And he said, you know what, let's try this out. So we've done this for the last couple of years, tried to do public education and residential fire prevention. Mm-hmm. And then most recently in the last couple of years, I've stepped in and worked with the firefighters in Sagal to help them with their commercial fire prevention program. Mm-hmm. There's about 100 businesses in Sagal that get inspected annually now, and they continue the same thing. You know, what businesses can do to prevent a fire, how they can help us with some access issues, and then our troops are a little more familiar with their businesses as well. So it kind of goes hand in hand. You know, we had two fires this last winter, one at the Vaymart Hoodoo Cafe out there on Vay Road, and then another one at the View restaurant.
Yes.
And both of those were kitchen type fires. So we want to always make sure that we get the word out to try and prevent those kinds of, you know, those kinds of fires. Because we have other kitchens and, you know, restaurants around there, especially in our rural areas. And you certainly never want to have a fire anywhere, but some of those are like outposts for the community. So we really want to make sure we help them out.
And so you do some fire prevention work with businesses as well as residential?
Yes, usually it's the fire engine crew that does the commercial inspections. Mm-hmm. If they have somebody that they think I should visit with, occasionally I'll go out as well. But they do most of that work. I just make sure that, you know, remind them we got to catch all those inspections, yeah, and not just part of them. So I just kind of monitor it.
So tell us about the footprint of the Selkirk Fire District. What are the fire districts in the area and how do they work together, overlap?
Right now the Selkirk has... And then it is the way it is. We have three areas. We have Sagal area and Sandpoint. They've been working together for about 3 years now, I believe. And then Westside decided to join in with Selkirk about a year and a half ago. So the three departments work together on staffing and on response, but they still have three different budgets. And they have three different boards. In Sandpoint, there's a city council that runs there, that's in charge of them, and the others have fire boards. So it's three different areas that work together as one, three budgets, three boards, and we call it it's more of an agreement to work together. And there's some move right now. There was an article in the Reader last week that perhaps by fall, there may be some movement to start a joint powers authority where they would act with a single budget, mm-hmm, and a single board. But that's up to a number of different officials and a lot of different decisions by the boards. So I don't really have that much to forward on about that. But it would be, efficiency-wise, it would be nice if there was a single budget and there was a single board. Right now, there's quite a few meetings just to keep everybody informed on what's going on. So that's not always the most efficient thing. Yes, sir.
And then some people who are listening live up in the northeast side of the county, and they're covered by the Northside Fire District.
That's correct. Yeah. Right.
Hmm. Well, we've learned a lot about the fire department. Tell us anything else that's new that listeners might like to know about.
Well, recently, if you drive up and down Highway 95, people may have noticed that the Kerrywood Fire Station in the south end of the county has been out near, I think it's Bayview Road that comes in right there. That's now built up to where we can have two firefighters stay there, and we have seasonal firefighters there for the for this season, this summer season. That's a new thing to have some staffing down there. And also we have two what's called resident firefighters out in Westside, which is Dover. There's a fire station over in Dover, and they actually live at the station, and they respond to calls, and we have a 40-hour firefighter that works there as well. So we have coverage on the west side, and we have coverage on the south end of the county. So both of those are real improvements to the area.
Yeah, so I would say so. That's a big improvement. And you're not relating the 95, the EMT facility on 95. That's not technically a firefighting.
No. That's the Bonner County EMS department has a building down there. It's just recently opened. And that's staffed with EMTs and paramedics. And that's a separate entity. They respond to all the, EMS, first aid type calls. And then we generally respond with them. Whoever arrives first can start treatment. And then ultimately the EMS staff may transport them. Okay. So it's a joint effort. It's just a different model than a lot of departments are used to, but it works fine here. It's worked here for a long time.
But it is a little unique here. Typically, they might be a combined. This is a little different than
right.
other parts
of the
country.
In many areas of the country, it's combined, fire and EMS. In our county, the two are separate. Mm-hmm. So it's a largely political decisions to have that run that way. So anyway, that's how it works here.
The way it is. That's the way it is.
You've mentioned volunteers, and I know in some places the fire departments are really driven by volunteers, and others it's almost all paid folks. And tell us about the situation here.
We have a paid staff. We have paid firefighters that are here, 24/7 here. There's a Sagal station that has full-time paid staff. Sandpoint has a full-time paid staff. And that's mostly the coverage that we have. Northside has administrators. So does West Ponderay. They have administrators. And then they rely on volunteers. And we here in Selkirk also rely on volunteers to supplement our staffing. So whenever we have a call, for instance, we get a fire call, we'll send out a tone, we'll get volunteers to come back and staff the stations because life goes on. Just because there's one fire doesn't mean there won't be another one until the fire goes out.
Sure.
So we have to think about backups always. So the volunteers serve an important role to help the paid staff. We're real lucky that we have some paid staff in our county. And you're right, there's other areas in our country that are covered with 365 days a year with full paid staff. We have a small tax base, really, and really a small number of people in our county. So it's really tough to balance that out between paid and volunteer. So we're kind of blessed. We have some volunteers that are actually kind of a lifetime of service that are willing to get trained up and then come in and do it.
And it really is that, isn't it? Because there's not like a per diem per se, or not a large one. They really are doing it just out of feeling like it's the right thing to do and maybe to gain experience.
Right. There's two tracks. One is, I want to serve and I want to do the right thing and help my community. And it's very interesting. There's a lot of, guys that are similar vintage to me that just like to do it, and they learn how to drive and pump the fire engines and they help. And then there's also a kind of a younger track of people that want to be a firefighter at some point in their life, and they come in and they get valuable experience, they get training. We can get volunteers that come almost right out of high school, and we can give them the career path of here's the classes you need to take, here's the different fire academies you need to attend. And ultimately, they get to where they can compete for a job in Spokane or here. We hire some here, but with a small staff, there's just not that much turnover and not that many jobs to start. But the other bigger cities, they can look at it and say, well, wait a minute, this guy may be from a rural area, but he's got good experience. He or she has good experience, good understanding of what the fire service is all about, and all the right training. So it's a good career path.
Plus, there's just a natural fascination that a lot of people have with fire. I mean, it really is a fascinating. When it's the prototypical, you're a kid, what do you want to grow up and be? You want to be a policeman or a fireman? And,
yeah.
And part of that's more than just the men in uniform.
I don't know.
Yeah, it
maybe
is.
Maybe it's just me staring it. But you think about people staring into a campfire. There is a fascination with it.
Yeah, there could be. It wasn't for me, but I know there are some guys that are, guys and gals coming in through the ranks that are through the volunteer course, especially that they just always wanted to be a firefighter, or someone in their family was a firefighter. So they saw what the duties were. They kind of fell in love with all of that. And that's just, it's funny what motivates people to do certain things. And sometimes it's a childhood thing. And sometimes you find out about it later in your life.
Yeah, it's a good, well, however they get there, it's a great thing that the volunteers are doing. Mark, let's talk a little bit about what people need to be thinking about for fire prevention. We've got just day-to-day, we've got thinking about forest fires, and then, of course, we've got 4th of July, three categories at least.
Okay, you mentioned the forest fire stuff recently, and we talked about staffing for the fire departments. You know, IDL, Idaho Department of Lands, also staffs a couple of seasonal fire engines up here, and they're very important to our overall, you know, fire protection system, if you will. Most recently, we had a fire down in Garfield Bay, and it started out, I think it started out as a, you know, a start was outside the buildings. It went uphill, which is typically what fires do. And ultimately, then we had some train crossing issues. So we had IDL that rolled out on it. Northside rolled out on it. We rolled out on it. We Northside came in and helped and assisted us. And I think we even had some resources from Timberlake. So when we have a fire, we really pull in everybody.
Right.
It's not just, we don't keep these things to ourselves.
No.
But largely, Idaho Department of Lands is taking lead for state lands and the lands they manage. That's not the province of the fire districts.
But they generally do the outside fires. Mm-hmm. You won't find them crawling into buildings and going into attics and going up on roofs and doing ventilation.
Right.
That's usually the structure fire people like Selkirk or right. Northside or West Pondere. But we really work together as a team. And the departments, for instance, Sam Owen sent a fireboat over to Garfield Bay across the lake and ended up being an integral part of the fire attack because they would fill the water tanks up of the fire engines and do a water shuttle. So we have an endless supply out there in the pond. So that worked out. That was really a good idea from one of the Selkirk firefighters said, hey, let's get the fireboat started. And that worked out great to get a good water supply.
And whose is the fireboat? Who owns that?
Sam Owen has a fireboat that they sent across. Sandpoint has a fireboat, but it's, again, here's what happens. When you get a fire response, all of a sudden, you don't have a fire operator in Sandpoint for a little bit of time until we can get callback staffing.
Well, in proximity to Garfield, Sam Owen's probably closer.
And so anyway, we use Sam Owen for that. Sandpoint has their fireboat and it's in the water and operable. So we have to, you know, you just juggle the response and then ultimately you get callbacks from volunteers. And then the paid staff that's off duty, they'll come in. So it's really kind of, you never really put your hat down.
Right.
When you're a firefighter up here, because there's always, even though if you're off duty, there's always that callback responsibility that, you know, your cell phone goes off and it's like, oh, wait a minute, we got to get over to the station.
And just to kind of round out the big picture, because a lot of fires in our area may be on national forest land. Mm-hmm. They've got a very large firefighting unit and budget. And although their responsibilities won't tend to the structural residential, certainly as people were hearing about fire safety, a large impact of the potential of not being fire safe. You know, are those fires that can spread then to residential areas?
Right.
Right. So we have federal, state, and then our local firefighters. It's quite a combined group.
And that's the way it is across the country. Most of the fire service, I'll say for 40 or 50 years, have gotten used to the idea that it's never really your own incident. It's a combined effort. Because really, you have to look at the big picture of, you know, there's lots of different exposures. You know, the fires could be a lot bigger than you may think initially. So you really have to plan for, you know, okay, what happens here later in an hour from now? What happens tonight when it gets dark and the wind slows down? You know, we should get a better foothold on this fire. But on the other hand, the next day, if there's still fire going, it's going to kick up again. So there is a lot of planning that needs to happen. And then a lot with that planning, a lot of logistics and a lot of staffing issues.
Right.
So that's why it really makes sense to work with all the different agencies and not just think that you're your own, you know, your own world.
Right. And it makes citizens who aren't involved with firefighters very often really understand why you're out there and at the ready, because sometimes you think, oh, those firefighter guys, they work a few days and then they hang around the station. Well, that's not what it is. You're ready and you're preparing, and there's just so much other than the fire itself.
The firefighters at the station stay pretty busy. They have all their own equipment to take care of. They go on all the responses. You know, for instance, Sandpoint, they did all of their commercial fire prevention work. They started in February, and they've done, I mean, there's hundreds of fire inspections to do, and they did it all in the last 3 months.
Yeah. Hmm.
And they're essentially done now and made a fire pre-plan for every business.
That's busy.
So that's staying pretty busy. Sagal does the same thing. They do fire pre-plans and commercial inspections for all of their businesses. So if you think about it, there's a lot to it. They don't, like you said, come to the station and hang out. It's come to the station, get your gear on and get ready and get a game plan, because they need to do X amount of fire inspections every day pretty much to keep up. Yeah. Plus, they need to do all the training. If you don't do ice rescue training once a year, your skills aren't quite as good. If you don't do over the side, you know, rope rescue training, your skills aren't quite as good. You know, you'll go out and do EMS calls, and you'll go out and do some basic fire call stuff on a fairly regular basis. But a lot of those specialty calls, you really need to stay sharp on, because when you need the skills, you need to be sharp. You can't just say, well, wait a minute, we have to scratch our heads here. Now, everybody expects really good quality, efficient service on everything.
And are those courses required of staff and volunteers? Or
yes, the volunteers participate, and they're always welcome to come and do the training. And the paid staff, they have a schedule of the training. They try and get at least 2 hours of training in every day on average. So if you think about it, if you say there's an 8 to 10 hour kind of work day that they have to jockey around and do their calls and fire prevention work and then training, they have a pretty full docket of things
really
to do.
They really do. It's so interesting to know what they're up to.
Yeah. No, it's not just sitting around the station making chili and playing cards.
Yeah.
Feeding the dog.
That went away long before I got into the fire service. So, yeah. So.
Well, let's take a short song break, and then we're going to come back and talk a bit more about some basic prevention, 4th of July, et cetera. Because of the rainy morning we've got, but the possibility of fire looming, we've selected James Taylor. And that was James Taylor with Fire and Rain. And this is the KRFY Tuesday Morning Show with Julie and Phil. And we're here with Mark Sauter, Selkirk Fire Marshal, having a great talk about all things fire. We're about to move on to talking about what people need to be thinking about with an impending fire season. Mark, what does our fire season look like? Are we shaping up well?
It looks like we're at moderate fire danger, which is a lot better than an extreme this early in the season. Getting a little bit of rain every week or two, while some people don't care for that in the summer, it's a real healthy dose of some moisture. So we're good with that. We don't like it extreme at all, but certainly in early July, it's nice to have it a little bit moist.
But we are outside of the window where folks should be burning their slash unless they get a permit and go through all the requirements.
Yeah, everybody needs to maintain their permits and go through that process. So we're not in a no burn situation. I'd like to, I'll just say yet. You just don't know what the forecast will be. It seems like up here we're generally always about 2 weeks away from being in an extreme situation.
Yeah.
So that rain every once a week, while some of us don't necessarily like it, that once a week rain sure is nice for keeping up fuel moistures and keeping things just a little bit damp.
But the flip side too, if it grows a lot of underbrush, a lot of grass, and dries out later in the summer, then it can elevate the danger.
You're right. It's always a kind of a mixed bag, getting that moisture, just like thinning out your trees on your property. The good news is you have less chance of having a crown fire and having that a real severe fire, but it certainly opens up the forest floor for grasses and other things to grow that are maybe less interesting to have.
So you can come out actually and help advise people around their house what to do.
Yes, we make home visits, or I make visits all the time out and work with people, talk to them about keeping the vegetation down around their houses, what's we call defensible space or even survivable space around your house. You know, a lot of times it's like, well, people think, well, you know, if I have a problem, I'll just call the fire department. But it's, you know, one, we have to get there. Two, it, you know, depending on where they live, they can live, you know, 10 to 20 miles from the fire station if in certain areas. So it takes us a while to get there. And that's a long time to just sit and wait for help.
Right.
So we try and encourage people to be a little more self-sufficient and getting that defensible space, keeping a buffer around their house, watching what they store near their house. All those things are important. We like to, I coach people and say, you know, you really want your house to be a little more like Teflon. And so nothing will stick to it. And also have that area around the house so the fire could actually burn around your house without having any firefighters be there. That's a lot more, it's just a more tenable situation than having the trees growing over your house and pine needles in all the valleys and, you know, all the stuff stacked up against the house.
And the third thing you haven't mentioned yet is that water can be an issue, getting water to the house, and your own water isn't always available if you're having a fire, is it?
Absolutely. Thanks for reminding me of that, Julie. Yeah, there's lots of options for people to have water on their property. Some people have a dry hydrant into a pond so we can draft water. Some people have cisterns. There's lots of different developments over the years that have put cisterns in that store 2,000 to 3,000 gallons of water that we can get access to. We have tankers that we can bring out and, you know, they'll carry a few thousand gallons of water. Our engines carry about 1,000 gallons of water on them. So, you know, all those things are important. Having water there, though, means that we don't have to shuttle, have a fire engine crew somewhere else to go up and back to bring water in. And sometimes water is a few miles away that we can use for firefighting. So it makes a big difference to have close in water supply. Now, some areas of Sagal and Sandpoint and even Dover have fire hydrant systems. That's ideal. But when you get into the rural areas, having a fire hydrant in front of every house really isn't practical at this point. So that's why it's a balancing act about how much water you'd have on site.
Sure is. And you touched on this a little bit, but not every driveway will accommodate a fire truck, will it?
That's true. Thanks. Yes. When I look at the properties, I start off with, you know, a street sign. You know, is there a street sign that would, you know, show people how to get there? And it's not always just the first in fire engine, the Sagal crew. Oftentimes they've been there before, or they know the area. But what about the next in crew from Sandpoint coming in that hasn't been out in that area, or Northside, or IDL, or anybody else that may be coming, or the volunteers that are coming in with another engine or a tanker to bring water in? So it's not that simple. But certainly after the road sign and then a numbered sign into the base of the driveway, and then it's, you know, what's the width of the driveway? Is it 15 feet wide or is it 8 feet wide so the family Subaru can make it? Is it a two-track driveway or is it a driveway that's really built for all-weather conditions so we can go in and out? You know, fires don't just occur in the summertime. We get fires in the winter as well. So we'd like to have an all-weather surface. And then how steep is the driveway? You know, 10% grade is about as steep as we like to have a fire engine run up and down on. So, you know, if you feel like you're getting pushed into the back of the seat as you're driving up that hill, that's getting pretty steep.
You might want to have your own firefighting
yeah.
plan.
Yeah. So, and then the other thing is the height. We like to have 13 feet, 6 inches. Of height above the road. And again, it's really, you know, people really love to have all their trees around all their properties, but when all the tree branches and everything grow into the sides of the road or the top of the road as the canopy, pretty soon it gets to be a little bit dicey to get a fire engine in there.
And the house itself, limbs around your house can't be great when you're having a fire.
Sure. It's real homey to have those trees real close to your house. But when the winds are coming up and there's some fire down the hill from you, The trees aren't quite as attractive. We try and tell everybody there needs to be a balance, some spacing between the trees, some spacing between the trees and the house. So no one wants to live up here in the middle of a football field. But on the other hand, if your house is really dark in the wintertime because of all the tree canopy, you might want to think, hey, maybe we should do some thinning.
And we've done quite a bit of talking about what's important outside the house and a defensible space, et cetera. But inside is a whole nother matter. Again, common sense, but there's some basic rules we should be thinking about there.
Sure. The basic discipline of, you know, watching what you store in your house, fire, you know, having smoke detectors, carbon monoxide detectors are always helpful. Having, you know, good travel paths in your house, getting in and out. Not just a single door. You know, in the wintertime, it's really easy to kind of clear the path to your front door, but you know, does your back door still work? You know, the windows in the house should all work. Those are all important. But you know, every year we get some heater fires that happen in the heating systems or hot water heaters that are not ducted properly. So the construction kind of quality of construction really makes a difference. You know, one of the basic tenets of fire prevention is separation, and having some space around all these different ducts and flues makes a difference. You know, some people use wood to keep their homes warm all winter. So that means that fireplace runs, you know, almost 24/7 for seven. Well, I guess we probably had fireplaces running yesterday.
Yeah. So I'm sure we did.
So if thinking of that, you know, those things run for 5 months straight, and that's a lot of heat to build up. And also it, you know, flues wear down. And so you really need to keep an eye on those types of things.
And so in addition to prevention, first response at home, you recommend folks have a fire extinguisher?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Thanks for bringing that up.
Tell us more about what kind, what they should look for.
Just an ABC fire extinguisher. They can be purchased in any of the home improvement stores. I'm sure you can buy some online. But an ample size, you know, five pound extinguisher at least. Especially if you live out, you may be on your own for a little while. So there wouldn't be anything wrong with having, you know, two or three.
Yeah.
Maybe you want one, you know, outside your kitchen area. You don't necessarily want one to be parked underneath the stove and then have a stove fire and have to kind of climb in there and get it. So usually it's keep it a little bit away, but you know, one in the garage area, near a fireplace or any other area that you may have a problem. Outside barbecues, being ready for something to happen there. You can also have a hose that's, you know, charged up, and that's a great thing to do. You know, we have people that have burn piles near their homes in the spring, and you know, more than once, those fires have got away from them. They hadn't planned really that they would start burning up and get close to a building, and the next thing you know, now it's a building fire. Yeah. So it's nice to think about it. Have extinguishers and have, you know, some hoses. You can get those little what they call hydrants that are frost free that you can get a good water supply out of with a good 3/4 inch garden hose.
And another note on your extinguisher, if it's 20 years old or so, you might want to check it, make sure it's still some.
Actually, the commercial inspections, they should be checked once a year. And that's just always a good thing to do, whether it's, you know, a change of in the fall or in the spring, check your gear. You know, that's what firefighters do every day. So it's a good thing to do. You know, you can always retire your extinguisher into your car and buy another one. I always say, you know, fire extinguishers and smoke detectors and CO monitors are just great Christmas gifts because it's a nice thing that everybody can use. Flashlights, all kinds of emergency preparedness things that every house should have.
Almost as good as getting a vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, probably not quite as good as a vacuum cleaner, but certainly keeps you safe.
Careful, guys, what you give.
Both would scare the cats.
Very true.
So speaking of holidays, we've got one coming up tomorrow that plays important in your world, the 4th of July.
Of course. We have, you know, a big community display here in Sandpoint, and I think there's other displays planned for around the area. From the fire department's perspective, the public displays really are the best way to to have a display and to celebrate. It's a great way to meet all, you know, to visit with all your neighbors. And they just have, usually it's a very spectacular display to try and replicate that with those displays with what we may be able to buy at a fireworks stand. It's tough to do.
And expensive.
Yeah, it gets expensive. The volunteer groups that staff all the fireworks booths, they all need the funding. We understand that. But you know, the Lions does a good job of having a public display. And generally speaking, you go there, watch the display, and go home, and everybody's safe. The private fireworks that you can have, it's important to a lot of people to celebrate on their own, but those sparklers get real hot. Lots of kids get burned by them. The sparks and other things that come from private fireworks don't always go well in the wildland areas. You know, we only have a couple of fire engines here in our area, so responding to small fireworks related fires isn't always the best use of our resources. But we certainly, if we have a fire, we're going to go and take care of it. But we certainly always encourage everybody to go to the public displays and have a little less, you know, celebration with the private stuff.
And the same with the medical emergency calls too. The risk to injury from use of fireworks spikes because of the use of them on the
fire. Oh, absolutely. And everybody, you know, all emergency services generally get busier around the 4th of July with fires and other injuries. So, and you know, earlier we were queuing up, we talked a little bit about the boating and going out and watching the fireworks show on the lake. That's a great kind of tradition for a lot of people, is to have some kind of a family dinner and then take the boat out and go see the fireworks display. And it's a great thing to do. But just as a reminder for everybody, this year especially, there's a lot of debris in the lake. So, you know, when the encore goes up and the last fireworks start going off, you can usually hear the engines firing up and everybody wants to get home. So, but this year, more important than ever is just take your time, be careful. You know, the speed limit on the lake at night is 25 miles an hour, but that's still pretty darn fast to hit a log or any of the other debris. So just really use some caution going home and take your time and get home safe.
And the sheriff's office has reported a larger than a usual abundance of debris underneath the bridge from the log jam that burst on the lake. So especially near City Beach where the fireworks display will be going on, those boaters should be very, very cautious going under the bridge.
Yeah, you're right. And the bridges, I try and spend some time on the water. And I know a lot of times the logs will get caught in the different bridge abutments and actually stick into passages that you think you could generally boat right on through. You know, it's a no wake speed underneath the bridges within 200 feet. But you really have to be careful because some of those logs will get caught, and then not all of a sudden the arm of the log is out, you know, 15 to 20 feet past the pylons.
Right, a sweeper. So,
there you go.
That's right.
A good term.
That's right. Will the fireboat be out for the 4th?
Yes, we usually we'll have it out amongst all the revelers out on the water, and I think the sheriff's department has a boat out as well.
It could be a busy night.
So.
That's right. Mark, what about upcoming events the fire department's got going? Do they do classes, anything? Are they at the fair? What's happening with them?
We have a pretty busy season countywide as far as public education goes. There's a open house up in Coolin, Cavanaugh Bay this Saturday. There's another one for Priest River Days at the end of July. Sam Owen has a pancake breakfast in late July that we do public education at. We will do a booth at the fair for public education on fire prevention. That's in, I think it's the 6th through the 10th of August or something like that. And then there's a emergency preparedness fair in September that we'll staff as well at the county fairgrounds. So we try, whenever there's a public event, if it's an option, we try and staff it and get the word out on fire prevention.
And I don't suppose you're a part of how to avoid calling search and rescue. That's Sandpoint Parks and Rec, isn't it, coming up?
That's not ours, I don't think.
There's a lot of good tips we've heard today that would help some people from getting into a situation that would involve search and rec.
Sure. So,
Right. Sure. And well, we always like to ask this question of people that are involved in interesting careers, and you're certainly qualifies for that. Any interesting stories of this summer or last summer that you should share, you would like to share with us?
Well, I tried to tell you a couple of, you know, little lessons learned. You know, if we had the two fires at the restaurants, we've had a burn pile get away and get into some structures. So, in a kind of nice way of just saying there's unintended consequences that often happen. And we, in the fire service, we get to see some of those unintended consequences kind of in a, you know, in a rescue mode. So we always try and talk to people and say, think this through.
Right.
You know, what are you doing here? And whether it's, you know, having a fire, you know, fire outside and in the brush, but think it through on what are we going to do if things go awry? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have a lot of people that have recreational fires this time of year in fire rings and fire pits and chimeneas and all of that. And I like to kid with them a little bit and say, well, okay, well, let's begin with the end in mind. How are we going to end this thing?
Yeah.
Are we going to, do we think it'll burn out on its own? Or do we think at some point we're going to have to extinguish it? When the fire's burning and it's, you know, over your head in height, that's not the time to try and start thinking, how are we going to put this fire out?
Right.
The time to think about it is before you light it up.
There you go.
So, so I'll leave that as my, those my yeah. stories.
Just don't walk away. Advice. Just don't walk away from it.
Right.
No, and have really do think about how your fire will get put out.
Yeah. Right.
If it right. needs to. That's well, Marcus, great advice.
As always, it's great to have you on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Yeah. Anytime, we're always happy to come back.
And if they'd like, if folks would like to get in touch with you for a home visit, what would be the contact info?
They can call our Fire Station 1 over in at the Sandpoint Fire Station.
Okay.
And we have an office that's staffed all the time, and there's a recording on it as well.
Good.
So if they'd like to contact us, we can schedule a visit.
And for general information, you've got a website too.
We do. Oh, and you know what? Before I forget, we also have a Facebook
good
listing as well.
And that's just Selkirk Fire?
I believe so.
Okay. And it's I think it's selkirkfire.org. I'm not sure. I was on there yesterday, but it's Selkirk Fire something.
Yes, so, we have a website.
Yeah, yeah, it's easy to find. It's pretty easy to find with Google.
Google knows all.
They do. Yeah. They do. Well, this has been a great interview. I want to thank you for joining us.
Thanks.
And if you missed any of the show or wanted to listen to it again, as always, it'll be available later on as a podcast right here at www.krfy.org.
That's right. And we're going to take a song break and come back with some upcoming morning shows and upcoming events. And the song is one picked by Mark. And that was the Marshall Tucker Band with Fire on the on the Mountain. And this is KRFY 88.5 FM, and you are listening to the Tuesday Morning Show with Julie Calamine and formerly Phil Huff. He's run off to a meeting, so you'll have to finish up the morning with just me. Upcoming KRFY morning shows are good ones. Tomorrow is the 4th of July, and I hope you have a fun and safe 4th. We'll be skipping tomorrow because it is a holiday. But Thursday, please join Jim Healy and Jack Peterson. They will be visiting with Beth Weber, director of the festival at Sandpoint Summer Youth Music Camp, and that will be Thursday at 8 a.m. And then next week, we'll be starting again on Tuesday. That will be the 10th, and I hope you'll join Phil and me with Britta Meyerly and Mary Franzel talking about the Scotchman Peaks Wilderness Goat Ambassadors and upcoming morning show, upcoming programs with Friends of Scotchman Peak. Wednesday, the 11th, I hope you'll join Chris and Susie, Chris Bessler and Susie Prez, and their guests will be city officials for a discussion about the downtown revitalization and other city news. That'll be next Wednesday at 8 a.m. Thursday, I hope you'll join Jim and Jack again, and they'll be visiting with Suzanne Day, I believe it's Day, children's librarian, who will be talking about the summer reading program at the East Bonner County Library. So we have got a lot going on with KRFY. And for those of you who weren't here a couple of weeks ago, we had our annual membership drive, at which time we were hoping to have our current members renew and add some new members. If you weren't able to join us for that event, I hope you'll consider joining or renewing your membership now. It's easy to do. You can do that at www.krfy.org. You can give us a call and leave a message. The phone number is 208 265-2992. And of course, you can go online to krfy.org. I've mentioned that already. So hoping that you'll become a member or renew your membership if you haven't done that. Now, on to upcoming events with the morning show. Upcoming events in the community after the morning show. Of course, tomorrow is the 4th of July celebration with Sandpoint Lions Club. They're sponsoring Independence Day, and that starts with the Kids Parade at 9 a.m. and the Grand Parade at 10 a.m. Then head to City Beach in the afternoon for a stage performance and a raffle plus fireworks at dusk. And as you heard from Mark Sauter, those of you who are boating, please be careful. Lots of logs in the water. There is road construction on Cedar Street, so be careful and be aware of that. And it'll merge on Oak and go west on 5th. Any questions about that, call 263-4118. Beyond that, we have on the 4th the Clark Fork Freedom Run, and that's a parade and fireworks if you're in Clark Fork. Freedom 5K Fun Run, it used to be named Hayden's Heart, and that begins a full day of classic 4th of July events at Clark Fork. They feature a new name and a scenic course. The 5K is put on by the Filling Station Youth Center to generate college scholarships for Clark Fork High School graduates. So that's a great place to be if you're not in Sandpoint. That begins at 9:30 a.m. As usual, it'll be Wednesday, so there is the Sandpoint Farmers Market, and that will begin at 3 p.m. So in your break between 4th of July activities, you can run to the farmers market and get your necessities. Then, beginning July 5th, we have the Idaho Draft Horse and Mule International. That's a big event. It goes from the 5th to the 8th. It's the Northwest's largest draft horse and mule expo. It's at the Bonner County Fairgrounds. Check out the show schedule, buy tickets at idahodrafthorseshow.com. Plus, there's lots more, including an art and gear show, and you can visit with the Gentle Giants in their stalls. I love those big horses. The number for more info on that is 208-263-8414. The weekend is full of music. I don't have time to talk about it all, but if you are free on the 7th, don't miss Pints for Pups, Tap Takeover. That's at the 219 for this event, and it goes from 4 p.m. until 9 p.m. Bring your canine companions and listen to Kevin Duran. Well, our time has ended for the Tuesday morning show. I'm wishing everyone a good week, and we'll go out with Bruce Springsteen.